Welcome to a summer edition of In the Garden with Kelly and Char. How does your summer garden grow?
I am having trouble with my red tomatoes, Kelly.
What kind of trouble?
Well, they are growing weirdly. Different kind of black marks on them, some mold, some I had to throw away, so I'm really disappointed. My yellow ones are fine. If anyone else is having trouble with red tomatoes, let us know.
Oh, dear. I've seen some of that posted on social media. I think people are sharing a great deal more this year because it's such a strange summer. And even though we were talking before we started recording here that we've got a wonderful breeze blowing, but it's a hot, muggy day today. And some of the rain that has come in the previous weeks have fallen hit or miss. Some people have gotten a wonderful respite from this terrible, terrible dry summer, and some people have not. So it's been hit and miss throughout Minnesota and throughout our region. And it's really hard to say. Some people have bumper crops of this vegetable and that.
That's right.
Some people have blossom end rot for their tomatoes.
Yes.
And they have cucumbers that go in 2 days from gherkins to whales. And these big yellow things. And it's amazing that, but the hit and miss of summer, it has been all up and down the map. So if your gardens are going sideways this year, there's always next year.
That's true.
And speaking of next year, we want to remind you at this time to take some photos of your gardens. See what the bounty was produced, maybe from those just a half a dozen of tomato plants that are now completely taking over, or cucumber vines that are wrapped around this and that and providing you with way more than you really can use. Keep that in mind next spring so
right.
that you're not over planting, and I think you're going to enjoy it just the same.
Right.
All right. Today's topic is a very summery one for this late summer topic. And Char and I both know that if you're really into flower gardening, it's helpful to have an array of flowers blooming at all times. So our topic today is Oriental and Asiatic lilies. Some of your favorites, I know, Char.
You bet.
Now, we have tulips in spring, lilacs in mid-spring, peonies in mid to late spring, and mums in the early to late fall, and with trusty annuals in periods throughout all the times we've just mentioned. Well, in mid to late summer, there's a species of flowers that definitely fills the bill for bloomers, and that's Oriental or Asiatic lilies. They're so beautiful in their striking color combinations and stunning just in the plain colors, even just pure white, such as the held over Easter lilies that I know Char has been planting for several years.
Yep.
You plant them either in the early spring right after Easter services, or maybe you've got them from the year before. Now, we're not going to go into daylilies today. They're different species, and they technically don't fall into the lily category. Also, they have a different type of root system entirely. So we're going to be talking about Oriental and Asiatic lilies, and they are often so fragrant, almost to the point of sending fragrance throughout an entire backyard.
Right.
Now, the Asiatic lilies, they don't have as much of the fragrance, but they are lovely nonetheless. And also, you know, we find that lilies are relatively pest-free.
Yep.
And because not very often you'll see a bunch of bugs or insects devouring a lily. So it must be something in the fragrance factor.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, there is a lily leaf beetle, and sometimes there are aphids to watch out for. But an insecticidal soap should do the trick as far as keeping those at bay. One of the few things in the negative column on both Oriental and Asiatics is they don't like to be transplanted. Location, location, location.
Is everything.
They need to be kept where they are. Now, this is where they differ from daylilies for sure, because, you know, Char and I both know, daylilies can be readily dug up and divided and replanted elsewhere at almost any time.
Right.
But if you've recently acquired an Oriental or Asiatic lily, maybe at a local greenhouse summer sale, make sure you scout out just the right location in your back or front yard for your new lily so that it's going to stay there for a while. And we have to make sure that it's provided the right requirements for a lily. Now, we've also noticed they don't always have to have a lily planted in full sun. Now, Char, he has beautiful stargazers growing and thriving in partial shade or dappled sun. And the heat of summer doesn't blast their blossoms as harshly, and they last longer. Now, what most lilies do appreciate upon planting them to your garden for the first time is a bit of bulb-boosting pellets or some bone meal is also good. Bulb fertilizer can be added to the deepest part of the hole you've dug for your new lily and mixed with a little dirt before adding the bulb. If you're using bone meal, put about 2 inches worth of that bone meal in the bottom of the hole. In a year or so, your lily is established, and if it seems to be doing well in the area you've chosen, then you can add a little more bulb-boosting pellets the following year when the lily's shoots first erupt from the ground in the spring. But please, work the pellets in carefully, or you could possibly break off a shoot that hasn't quite made it up through the soil surface yet, so be very gentle. Now, as for the actual planting of lily bulbs, first of all, when choosing your bulbs, make sure they're firm and plump. Place the bulbs, pointed ends up, at the very bottom of your hole. And if they happen to have a bit of a root system attached, spread those out laterally. Bulbs should sit with tips 3 to 4 inches below ground level. So you're burying these a lot deeper than some other specimens.
Right.
Cover the holes with the soil that you dig out and firm it well. Then water it. And if you have access to pine needles, because lilies love pine needles, mulch with a 3 to 4 inch layer of pine needles. That's on top. Then dried oak leaves are also good for lily mulch. Both spring and fall are ideal times for planting lily bulbs. Well, I have lots of oak leaves at my house, don't you know?
There you go.
Once again, you're listening to In the Garden with Kelly and Char, and today we're talking all about those beautiful Asiatic and Oriental lilies. So to recap lily growing tips, we know some sun is recommended, but it doesn't have to be a full sun location. Light shade is acceptable. As far as watering, in a dry year such as this, add consistent moisture. But remember, your bulb is down in the ground several inches, and if you water, please don't overwater, or else the bulb could experience rot. Again, with fertilizer, upon first planting, and then in spring, lightly, and be careful not to break emerging shoots. You can also apply some fertilizer just before lilies bloom. Can you also use well-rotted manure?
You could.
As long as it's old.
Right. Make sure it's composted.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the only problem that lilies could experience is botryitis blight. It's something I haven't seen, but the signs of this are orange circles that grow together on the leaves and eventually kill the foliage. If you see this, it looks kind of like apple blight.
Right.
Like apple rust. If you see it, remove and destroy any infected lily leaves, then spray weekly with a fungicide, probably one with some copper in the ingredients. We don't think that this blight is very common in our area. All right, now let's get down to the fun stuff, the kinds of lilies. Oriental lilies, a medium to tall lily usually, again, very fragrant, but it may need support if planted in an open area that doesn't have a sufficient windbreak. Remember to position any support stakes carefully to avoid piercing the bulbs. Stargazers, one of my favorite, they're a type of oriental lily, and typically they have raspberry red blossoms with white petal margins, some dark spots, and a yellow-edged green starburst center. And oh my goodness, you can smell them a mile away.
Oh yeah.
They're the one of the most popular lilies to go into floral bouquets.
And I would highly recommend another oriental lily, and that is the all-white Casablanca oriental lily. It's one of the most prized orientals of all time, with blizzard white flowers.
They are blizzard white, and I've seen those used with bridal bouquets as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Now, trumpet lilies, or sometimes called Chinese trumpet lilies, they can grow 4 to 6 feet. They're very statuesque. And we highly recommend planting these at the very back of a flower bed, maybe along a fence in a less windy area. Now, these also may need staking, by the way. I can use one of the square tomato supports that don't look like a tomato cage, but give some support as well. That would be great. Now, Orient pet lilies, these have two distinctive parents, Chinese trumpet lilies and Oriental lilies, hence the name Orient pet. Also, you know these little lilies are going to be tall. Because of crossbreeding, their stems are unusually strong, and the flowers are huge and waxy with slightly recurved petals. The fragrance, because of hybridizing, is more a subtle fragrance and a little bit on the fruity side as well. Now, these next lilies are called Martagon lilies. Here's a vintage species lily that is making a comeback in some urban gardens, and we're happy to see them again. But there is something about Martagons that is the exception to the lily rule. They have kind of an unpleasant smell and are not pleasantly fragrant at all. They're moderately tall, so I would say I'd plant them out on the far edges of the garden.
Yep, yep.
They're moderately tall, close to 4 feet. Their colors are somewhat muted and not bred to have bright, showy colors that make somebody stop in their tracks. Their petals are noteworthy in that they're swept back in what's called a recurved, plus they face downward. So they're a very romantic-looking lily, by the way. They bear their plentiful clusters of blossoms, and each bloom itself isn't gigantic, but what I would call medium-sized. Now, the bloom times for these are June through July. So, again, if you're spreading your bloom time out in the garden, if you plant some of these beauties, they would come in about midsummer. One other thing about Martagons, if you decide to grow them, clip or trim off their spent blossoms as they will reseed. And location, like a lot of lilies, they blend seamlessly into the shade between shrubs and under deciduous trees. Make sure you provide enough moisture for them as well if you do plant them near thirsty shrubs and trees, as they don't tolerate dry soil very well. All right, let's move on to Asiatic lilies. They're usually shorter lilies. They're about 2 to 3 feet tall and not as fragrant as the Orientals, but very colorful and showy. They run the gamut of colors, also often in very bright colors, and they grow in tidy, non-spreading clumps that come up faithfully every year. My kind of lily. Regal lilies are a native of southwestern China, and they grow to about 6 feet tall, and their blossoms are about 6 inches long, white with a bluish purple outside. They're not very fussy about the soil they're planted in, however, but they shouldn't be left to dry out. Keep them moist, but not soggy. Anytime you're dealing with bulbs, don't keep them soggy. When planting regal lilies, you could plant them in a grouping of 3 bulbs per the hole you're digging. Now, the old-fashioned tiger lily, the spotted orange favorite from years gone by, I have plenty of those along my southern border. And these lilies and some others will produce tiny bulbs called bulbils between their leaves and the main stem. Now, they look like it's a pest, but it's a seed, and they grow up and down the stem. They're really quite prolific. I have lots of those that I've already saved from this year. When these mature and fall off, you can plant them. And a lot of lilies reproduce by forming these little bulblets underground. So if you ever did attempt to transplant a lily, you'd probably find a lot of these little bulblets next to the mother bulb, sort of a bonus. But among the oldest of all ornamental plants anywhere is the Madonna lily, Lilium candidum. It's been cultivated for over 3,000 years. It features trumpet-shaped, pure white blossoms, brightened by yellow pollen in the centers, and each flower measures 2 to 3 inches long, sometimes longer, and emits a lovely fragrance with sometimes up to 20 flowers per stem. Its height is 4 to 6 feet tall. Propagation of the Madonna lily and a few other lily varieties is usually done by bulb division, though lily bulbs hate to be disturbed. Alternatively, you can wait until seed pods have dried out on the lily plant. Break open the pods and carefully collect the seeds, and then sow them in winter in vented containers in a cold frame or in an unheated greenhouse. By the way, I suspect the commercially grown Easter lily, grown by the millions each spring, is an offspring of the Madonna lily, only hybridized down to a short, more manageable height for indoor enjoyment. For winter care of most lilies, when it comes to mulching, apply no more than a two-inch layer of leaf mulch after the ground has frozen. This is a precaution against future bulb rot below the surface of the ground. On a cut flower note, if you're preparing to give someone a beautiful bouquet of lilies and you know it has several stamens full of pollen, that's those yellow fuzzy things in the middle, it's best to take a kitchen clipper and snip those off, or else you'll get a dark brown pollen mark on either yourself or your clothing or the person you're presenting your bouquet to. Another tip is when cutting lilies for bouquets, snip off only 1/3 of the stem's length or you'll weaken the bulb for future years. To make blooms last for a long time, place them in a larger container of cool water for several hours before displaying them in a vase. Now, to all you cat lovers or cat owners, of which Char and I are both included, there is one word of caution. Now, we're not sure if it's true with all lily species, but we do know that the Madonna lily for sure can be toxic to cats. Now, scientists aren't sure what the compound in the lily is, but even if the pollen falls on the cat's fur, and knowing how cats lick themselves clean, it could be fatal to them if they lick that pollen. So watch and observe and take necessary precautions. Asiatic and Oriental lilies are favorites of mine. I love them because they are so prolific, and they come at just the right time at the end of the summer to enjoy.
That's right. They fill the garden at a right time of the year.
They really do. The only thing I must say about them is they also attract bees. And I've had terrible trouble with bees, the little mason bees, the very little honeybees, ground bees, some people call them. I have been stung several times this late summer and have had quite severe reactions to them. And so it's really hard to have any water source out right now that the bees aren't just attracted like magnets to. And at the end of the year, sometimes it's really hard to stay away from them. But, and they are so necessary. The pollination that they provide makes us, have successful gardens. But be careful with bees because they are out in force at this time of the year.
Yep, you're right.
Well, we hope that you've enjoyed our foray into Asiatic and Oriental lilies. We hope that you are enjoying your late summer garden. And if you have any tips that you'd like to share with us, please let us know at Kelly and Char in the Garden on our Facebook page or ITG with Kelly and Char at gmail.com. And I'd like to see some of those pictures of late summer gardens. Take those pictures now because your gardens are in full bloom. You've probably got a lot of fruit and produce, and it's kind of nice to sit in February and look at all of the hard work come to fruition.
What a good idea.
All right. Until we see you next Wednesday on KDWA, happy gardening.
Bye, everyone.
That's our show for today. Be sure to tune in next week to In the Garden with Kelly and Char. Heard each Wednesday on KDWA Radio and online at kdwa.com. Rain for grain,